Do stories of mission today and have different. We had our Honduras team came back a couple weeks ago, and we've had a couple other people doing mission work, both near and far. And then that was the lectionary reading, and so it was awesome that it went together. The man is asking Jesus, like, who is my neighbor? Like, I'm trying to get this really, like, tight, constricted, you know, definition of neighbor, and Jesus is like, who isn't your neighbor? And so I think that goes really well with the theme today. So, Eric, why don't you come up, and do you want to do? I'll let you do the introduction.
Hello. How are you? I've been gone for 4 weeks, and it's just good to be back. So, thank you. So, come on up, guys. My name's Eric, and I hate matching T-shirts. So, we were at a church earlier this morning at 8 o'clock service here now, and then we're at a 10 o'clock service later. So, we're going to share here, drop the mic, and then go, okay? So, my name is Eric, again, and I work for Youth for Christ, City Life, and we're here to tell you about a trip that we went on. Dave and Elizabeth Hensel, are they here? They're not here. They hooked up, literally they hooked up at Mission Year, because they didn't know each other going in, so they went to Mission Year in Philadelphia, and then Dave tells me this opportunity. They did this thing called Justice Trip. It's like a mission trip, but with a focus on God's heart for justice, okay? And all kinds of justice, right? So so I'm like, hey, well, why don't we take our City Life group there, and we'll go. And so we're here this morning, first and foremost, to say thank you. Thank you. So people who give to this body, this church, goes into, do we still call it First Fruits? Whatever. So it goes into a fund, and then Imago has always been generous towards City Life. And they've helped us with the mission trip a couple years ago. Again, so thank you. We're here to report back a little bit about our trip to Philadelphia with Mission Year, okay? And these fine people, Dante, Lonnie, Kenny, and Charlie, all came on our trip. And there's some, oh, we're working on our staging for next time here at Imago, right there. So there you go. All right. So, hey, I'm going to turn over to Dante. He's going to share it. They've been told they have 2 minutes each. Okay. Here we go.
First and foremost, my name is Dante Stesic. I go to Peoria High. I started meeting with City Life last year, but halfway into the year. So I just started, basically. Last half the year and this year, my first years, it's been fun. It's been awesome. And now I'll speak about the mission trip. Okay, the mission trip was fun because it was a chance to get out of Peoria, which I've never been, and go to Philadelphia. And when I got there, I was surprised. I didn't expect so much of the city to be like that cool and look like that, because it was really clean, and the buildings were huge. I've never seen buildings like that in my life, okay? And I liked going around the city, walking around, being there, seeing all the different cultures, all the people around. It was nice seeing how they all came together. I liked all the stores, all the shopping areas, and the food was good too. Just gonna say that. But now I'm going to speak about my favorite part of the trip. My favorite part was just being there, getting to see and know the Mission Year students that are already there, and getting to talk to them, know more about their life, what they do in Philadelphia. And the things we did were fun, and I liked it. But most of all, I like being there and like meeting new people.
I feel like I should introduce myself now. My name is Lonnie Beasley. I went to Manual Academy. Started going to City Life my freshman year, and just kept on going. Like first time I went, I was like, okay, I don't know anybody here. I'm just here for the food. Pass me a plate. Somebody, give me some juice. Okay, thank you. And then like, just afterwards, I just kept on going. And I was thankful that I met Eric, Jay, and all the other leaders, because they had an impact on my life. And I'm thankful for just, you know, being around them. Going to Philadelphia opened my eyes to a lot of stuff that I saw here as a kid growing up. I saw a lot of poverty, a lot of kids, you know, going against each other. A lot of people, you know, older going against each other. And I thought, like, man, like, we need somebody to come in, you know, make a change. Something needs to happen. So we went to Philly, and it's just like a lot of poverty, a lot of people just like down talking to each other, a lot of kids running around, no guidance. I was like, okay, I can relate, because I grew up, you know, with all this happening in my neighborhood. And I feel like if I was there a little bit longer, I could have talked to either some kids or an adult or something, and I could have probably made a change in somebody's life.
Hi, my name is Kenny Ward. This was basically like a good trip for me, because I'm going to be heading off to college soon, so I'll be gone from City Life. So I'll be going off to Louisville. Hopefully I can make a change there. For the trip, well, let me tell you our service project. On the screen, that's the church we had slept at. But during the day, we went to a local furniture bank that basically a homeless man had came off the street, or homeless people, or anybody who was in need of beds, furniture, lamps, anything, anything. So basically they'll come there and we'll help load it. Yeah, load it on the things, stuff like that. We had days that we delivered that we had to go out and we got to interact with kids. For some of them, it was their first couch, first bed, and it was just like happy and made you tearful because you're helping someone. And so it made you thankful for what you have. It's like I am the kid that if I don't get it, I'm going to keep asking my mom, and eventually I'm going to get it. But for them, some of the kids, it was just basically like you could tell it was a no. And it made you understand and be thankful for what you have. And that's basically what I have to
say. Hi, I'm Charlie. I live in Delvin, but I go on lots of trips with the City Life kids. I went on a mission trip 2 years ago, Route 3, right? Yeah. And that is when I got hooked up with them. So we went to Philadelphia, and first day we were there, we walked around the city, and as we're walking, I'm seeing kids my age or younger, and they are living on the streets and have nothing. And it had me thinking, I get mad when I don't get a new phone or I run out of data, and I'm these kids don't have anything. And it was hard for me to I was mad at myself about all the stupid things that I got upset about. And then we went to the furniture bank and we started helping, and we were all kind of this is not doing anything for anyone, we're not really helping. And as the week went on and we traveled to the houses, and he said, saw all the kids and families get super excited about getting a couch, which I get a new couch every year, and I'm that's not a big deal to me. It was really cool and challenging to me to see that that's what people there deal with every day. They have to live their life on not know if they're going to eat, and I always know I'm going to have food on the table. So this trip for me was a lot of challenging what I had believed and what I had grown up with.
Thank you. Let's hear it for the team. And again, just want to say thank you for helping to send us, because taking urban teens out of Peoria for a week to a different city, it requires prayer, it requires financial support as well. So thank you again from the bottom of my heart. You blessed us. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, students, for being willing to make an impact and be impacted. All right, so next up is the Beers, if they want to come forward. So they shared about a year ago about their heart for Haiti and how God has been journeying with them, and it keeps getting deeper and deeper, and so they have some exciting news, I guess, updates on how their work in Haiti. So I'll let you go into it.
We're not as high energy as Eric, so we're sitting.
Yeah. So last year we shared about a project we were working on, and Dustin asked us to give an update today. So originally last year we talked about how we were going to work with this artisan group in Haiti outside of Port-au-Prince. there's an area called Canaan, or Canaan. It's Haiti's promised land. It's this really large, barren area where tens of thousands of people relocated after the earthquake. They didn't have anywhere else to go, so they moved out to this desolate area and kind of just like started building a city from scratch. Life is pretty difficult there. There's no electrical grid, no paved roads, no running water, but there's tens of thousands of people living here. And the people there are kind of organizing themselves to make their situation better, and we're partnering with one of the organizations there, a Haitian-led grassroots organization. So originally it was an artisan group within this organization. We were going to be bringing their goods to the States and sell them to make revenue for them. But as we were talking more with the group, we kind of realized that this was really only going to benefit a small number of people, and what they really needed was something that would benefit the larger community. And one of our primary goals throughout this whole program has been to be a genuine partner with the Haitian people, to really listen to them and be responsive to them when they tell us what they need and what their vision is for their own community. So a lot has changed since we spoke last summer. We have had lots and lots of talks with them, lots of email exchange, two separate trips, one in December and one last month, and after a lot of collaboration with them, we have started a micro-savings project that launched on July 1st.
Okay, so I'm going to talk a little bit about how the program is working. So first of all, Kimber mentioned that it's micro-savings. When we were actually first approached about this idea, they had the idea of microcredit, which is really prominent throughout. It's really common throughout the developing world. So basically, these are small loans, you know, $100, $200, $300 at a time, that are made available to people who wouldn't have access to that kind of capital to invest really any other way. And so it's become a powerful tool for a lot of people to lift themselves out of poverty. But as an academic who studies development and these kinds of issues, I know that there's also a lot of drawbacks to that system, in particular that it requires people to take out loans and to take on debt, and sometimes can leave borrowers in a worse situation than where they started. And so we're trying to follow on what we have learned and what other people have learned from studying these kinds of things, and we're pursuing a system that really kind of turns microcredit on its head, right? And it's about saving instead of borrowing. So we're helping people to save, the savings are theirs to keep. There's no debt, there's no interest, there's no possibility of defaulting on a loan. So the program that we've designed has three main components that are listed up there. The first one is matching funds. So what we're doing is partnering with participants in the program and saying, what you contribute every month, we're going to match that with a one-to-one matching system. We're talking about relatively small sums of money. So the majority of the people that we're working with are subsisting on less than $2 a day. So these are people that actually meet the definition of extreme poverty in technical terms. So we have a preset limit between, it works out to about $4 to $11 a month, which we will match. And I know it seems like not a lot of money, but it can make a difference given the scale of the economy that we're talking about. And the most important thing is that it's the right amount for an equal partnership, right? So part of the principle here is that we're not handing out money. We're actually we're recognizing the work that people are putting into this and what they're contributing, and we're helping them basically to build their savings and encouraging them to keep doing that by matching what they're able to contribute. The second part of the program is mobile banking. So one of the things that I think is often kind of left out of the discussion about poverty is that a lot of times poverty means being excluded from social and economic systems that would allow you to extricate yourself from that situation. So in this case, we're talking about basic financial services. According to World Bank statistics, which I think are pretty reasonably good statistics, fewer than 2 in 10 Haitians actually has access to a formal bank account of any kind, which means it's really hard for people to plan and save for the future when all of the money they have is in cash and is in a really insecure form. And so there's actually a large grant from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation after the earthquake in 2010 that went to build a mobile banking system in Haiti, which has, I think, a lot of promise but is not widely used still. And so what we're doing is taking advantage of the system, and we're registering all of our participants for the mobile banking account, and we're making all the transactions for the program through that account. So we're basically acclimating people to learn to use the system, to try to recognize its benefits, and giving them a secure and safe place to keep their money and to save long after the program ends. The third thing that we're doing is providing financial education. We want to make sure that the people in our program are in a position to save effectively and also to invest the savings effectively. So we've partnered with some business and financial professionals in Haiti. So these are local experts that are providing financial training in basic financial literacy and savings and budgeting, as well as in entrepreneurship and business development. So we have a kind of a series of workshops that we've organized. The thing that I'm most excited about, actually, is that they're going to be doing a community assessment. So all the people in our program live in the same area in Canaan, and they're going to actually be doing a workshop where they're like walking around the area looking for business opportunities, looking for ways to invest their money, and then they're going to be critiquing and workshopping those ideas and actually developing like small business plans by the end of the program. So these are the three kind of pillars of the program, and they're designed to work in concert to basically give people the tools to start to invest in their future in a way that they're really not able to do right now.
So one of the main reasons why we're up here today is to thank all of you for your support through this program. Some of you have been really instrumental as we've been making progress. Emily Ambroso single-handedly made us a 501c3 recognized or registered in the state of Illinois. And some of you who are accountants and graphic designers have been really helpful as we've been working through the details of some of our program. And it's really valuable to us to have the support of our church body as we're moving forward in this. One of the big things that we've learned at our time at Imago here is the importance of being the image of God in the world, of bringing hope and healing to the broken places. And we see examples of that every week when we come to church. All the people who are sharing this morning, the Honduras team, the Breakfast Club, our involvement with Peace for Peoria, and all of the individuals here who are living out the gospel. This church is full of people who are genuinely following Jesus. And it's what we really love about this church. It's why we commute every week from Galesburg to be here. You guys really inspire us in being here has held us accountable as we've been making progress, and there's been times when it's been really difficult, but it's been good to have your support as we're moving down this path that we felt called down.
So I'm actually just going to pause for a second. This is not exactly the way this presentation was supposed to proceed, but I just wanted to stop and mention the pictures that we're looking at are primarily from a trip that I took in June a couple of weeks ago. I'm not a good photographer, but the people are amazing. I just want to say that the whole reason why we're doing this is because we really believe in the potential and in the strength and the worth, right, of the people in the community where we're working. And so I think it comes through in those pictures, but it's hard to explain what this community has been through, and I don't want to make this about suffering or whatever. It's about strength, right? It's about strength and resilience, and the fact that some of these people have actually been living in a tent for 6 years, right? Going on seven. So these are people who are they're worth helping. The last thing we want to do is basically to give you an opportunity to get involved in this in some way. And I would say that when we spoke last time, we didn't know exactly what we were doing, to be honest. That maybe came through. But we think we do now. We've been so impressed with the response that we got even last time when we weren't really sure. Just the talent and the heart of the people from our community and the way they've contributed to this project. And as we're developing an organization, we're realizing that's a hard thing to do, and we really need more people with skills and energy and the desire to do good work. So we want to invite anybody that's interested in this work to get in touch with us, and we can talk about how maybe you can contribute. And in particular, we really need people with experience in entrepreneurship and business development, both for the community that we're working with, but also for our own organization, because this is really kind of a social enterprise. Finance and accounting, marketing and fundraising, as well as web development and graphic design. There's lots of kind of moving parts here that we're realizing are difficult to really manage on our own, and we don't really have the skills on our own. And then the last thing is that we want to invite the community here at Imago to partner financially with our participants in Haiti. There's a lot of details on the website. We've spent a lot of time kind of developing those materials so you can learn more about the program and the people that are involved in this. But I just wanted to give you a sense of the scale that we're talking about. So we've calculated that for $15 a month, we can actually support one person in this program. And that includes the matching funds for their savings. It includes the mobile banking account, financial education, and all the local program management. We actually have, right now, one Haitian employee who's a program manager, and there may be more in the future. So it supports all of that. Everything on the ground here in the United States is volunteer. So it's a pretty, we think, cost-efficient way of doing things at the moment. So we hope that if you think that there's some value in what we're doing, that you will learn more. Try to visit our website if you can. We actually put the website in the program. It's r2rhaiti.org. It's Resources to Resources is the name of our organization. We should have said that. and yeah, we encourage you to get involved in some way.
So yeah, definitely check out the website if you're interested in getting involved or ask them questions. I see Dave is already. I saw your hand, Dave. You, ask him the questions. So something that is unique about Daniel and Kimber is that I'm inspired by, and I've told them this, is that for a lot of us that have a heart to be agents of change in the world, that we've been transformed by Jesus, we want to extend his love, mercy, compassion to other people, we kind of spread around that energy, you know, in various ways, and, you know, it kind of is cumulatively a way that we live out in mission. And not that they don't have other arenas that they do this, but I just think it's such a beautiful expression that they've continued to lean into this niche, and that God is kind of, they've changed career paths for this, that they are taking trips on their own dime to go to Haiti, that they're creating a nonprofit. It's just so beautiful that it's very few of us, I think, that get the, maybe have the determination or the illumination on how to lean in. This is such a specific way to serve people. And so, anyway, I admire their neighboring to the people in Haiti, the beautiful people of Haiti. So, next up, we have the Honduras team, just three representatives. So, Steve, why don't you come up and give us the report on how the trip went this past year.
Just so you know who went, would the team members stand up so people can identify? I'm curious, in terms of the marketing, if you've been coming here, say, 6 months, 3 months or more, if you're not aware that Imago Dei sends mission teams to Honduras, would you raise your hand? If that would be new information for you. Okay. Not very many. I'm impressed. Good. So serving the poor is not merely something that Imago does. It's really something that Imago is. It's who we are. We follow the mandate of Jesus. And it's really in our DNA, whether it's Haiti, whether it's the inner city, whether it's serving breakfast here, whether it's Honduras. And so we've been doing this. My wife and I have been going to Honduras since 2000 and serving down there. And side note, we went to Haiti, Les and I, just the two of us, for 2 weeks prior to the earthquake. And I was appalled at the state of Haiti, and we've been going to Honduras for quite some time. Not that Honduras is palatial, but the poverty in Haiti was even more gruesome, much less after the earthquake. I just can't imagine. And then we started coming to Imago about 8 years ago, whenever, and began leading teams, and Corey Brown and I co-lead, Brian Holmes and I co-lead. So we go down there and we build houses in this terribly poor area. Good news is the last house was completed Saturday by Mercy International, the sponsoring mission organization. Bad news is, in the last 2 years, an entire new population has moved in, and I don't know whether it's shown any shacks yet, but they've all built these same structures. They have no floors, they live in the dirt, it's just terrible. And I'm hoping that the mission base we serve will take on this project, because they're living. There they are, those poor Hondurans. Okay. Yeah, that's one example. And so there's a whole new addition, hundreds of people living in this. So maybe we'll get to tackle that. At this time, I've asked Lena and Kyle to come up, and they're going to share a few things.
Pretty sure Steve asked me to speak because he knows I don't cry, so that was a surefire thing. So this is my second time going to Honduras. I went 2 years ago, and after that, definitely understood why people go back. It's at a place where you look at the shacks, and there's so, like, I think this picture, and a lot of them really portray that. There's a lot of darkness there. But you are, like, in the midst of this beautiful scenery, the bluest skies you'll see, the most gorgeous flowers, and what really stuck out to me, too, were the kids. Whenever I see darkness, it's the teacher in me, I think, that just looks for kids. And they're just such a bright spot of joy. So there were a couple of kids. They follow you everywhere. I think we probably all had bruises from them literally just like attaching to us like Velcro. Kyle probably won that one. You had the most kids. But there were a couple of kids. She'll come up soon. There were the first day I think we were there. This little girl, Natalie, who could be a poster child for any beautiful model agency ever. She's just the most beautiful child I've seen. His big brown eyes. And then her brother Anthony came up too. And definitely a language barrier. I think the most commonly used phrase I had was, I speak very little Spanish, I'm sorry. But with kids, they don't care. They're just used to it, and there's so many other ways to communicate with them. So we kind of hung out with them every week or every day, and I'd try to find them, and they'd toss around in the dirt for a little bit and play just like any kids here would, and fight, the two of them, brother and sister. And just so much joy that they had. So we found them throughout the week, and they were just always kind of a bright spot, and the kids that they came around with. And Natalie, for example, seemed like this really quiet child, but then like there was one day she ran off and tried to scale a fence to get into this playground that they had just built, and there was like barbed wire on it, and I was like, oh, I like her. She's got a little spunk to her. On the last day, we went to visit them at their house. And as soon as I call, I mean, I have like three kids on my arms because they know when you're leaving and they don't want you to. They're just so, they just crave love so much. And so I call them and Anthony, a little brother, comes running out. Like he dropped everything he was doing and just sprinted to come see me. And it was the most rewarding thing. He then climbed me like a tree, which I did not know was possible, like a monkey. All of a sudden he was just like face to face with me. And it was just like the greatest expression of love. And with a short-term mission trip like this, you kind of wonder what difference you make being there. I mean, we build a house, which is great, and they're long-lasting structures. But the relationships that you build there, even within a week, are so powerful. Because to me, it was like that kid, for those 5 days at least, felt so loved that he came out running to us and then just followed us around. We asked about his sister, and she had actually gone to the hospital. Definitely a language barrier there, but her grandpa said that she was sick. It was something in her chest. So I felt like that was kind of a metaphor for everything that happens in the invasion in that area, is that there's so much joy and so much smile, so many smiles and brightness in the kids, but at the same time, they're up against so much. So it was kind of, it was sad not to see her that day, but I gave him some bubbles and crayons, one for his sister, one for him. And he latched on to those and protected them and didn't let any of the kids take them. But he didn't drop them in his house. He carried them with him like the biggest prize. And I just think of the kids that I teach on a daily basis, and they have like a broken crayon, and it's just like not good to them anymore. So I think international missions just give you that perspective of life here and there, and that appreciation for things. So that was the kids' side. The adults, too, I felt like this time I really was able to dive in a little bit more and talk with some of the adults. And there was one woman who the team has met with several years, and I never got a chance to meet her until this year. She definitely left a lasting impact. But one of the things I can still remember her saying, I remember her speaking and thinking, I want to remember this one sentence she just said. She told us, she said, people don't see me. Nobody sees me. But when you come here, you see me. And that was just such, it could tell that in a way she had felt validated. This woman who had so little felt validated by our team that returned back. She had Steve and Leslie's picture up on her board. I mean, I do too. I have that in my house with you guys. They're just great looking people. But but you could tell over the years that even the combined impact of different teams going let her know that she was seen. And I feel like that is us carrying the image of God into the world. And everyone here in the church who has supported the teams over the years, you let people know that they are seen. And for her, that was such a gift. So,
one thing that Lena left off, stop her in the hallway and ask her about the kid that bit her directly in the butt cheek while we were there. Because it's...
That was not one of my peers. That was the other kid.
Right.
Yeah, that was funny to me, but yes, I took it, but not by a mosquito, but by a child.
Okay, so while Lena can do coherent thought and no tears, I can't. I'm going to use these note cards. I'm sorry, but that's the only way you're going to get anything that makes any sense. Okay, so Steve, a couple days ago, was like, hey, can you tell everyone about this trip in 4.5 minutes? There are 1,000 things that I want to tell you about what went on this year.
I didn't even... Am I 2 seconds? This is terrible.
Okay, so what you're going to get is one story and then kind of one closing thought out of me. I've always had reservations about short-term mission trips, so last year when I did this the first time, I had mixed feelings about it. I've always assumed that when a bunch of white people go to a foreign land and do whatever, we're nameless, faceless people that show up, provide something, and then disappear. But I had a moment on this trip that kind of reaffirmed to me that that's not the case, at least with what we do here in Honduras. So I'm at our first job site, Elvis's house, and I happen to be working alone on something. The rest of the team goes somewhere else, and I don't know what they were doing. I finish what I'm doing. I'm walking down this dirt street, and I am looking for the rest of the team. I come up on this pickup truck, and there are two little girls on the back of it facing away from me. So without even seeing their faces, I go, hola, chicas, ¿dónde está los gringos?, which is where the white people at. So one little girl kind of points, and she goes, oh, there are four houses down on the right. And I'm like, okay, gracias. And as I start to walk away, I hear, hola, Carlos. So I'm Kyle, but in Spanish, I'm Carlos because nobody can pronounce Kyle. So I turn and look, and I hadn't even recognized my friend Andrea from last year. And so she, with a big smile, jumps down off the back of this truck and comes up and gives me this huge hug. And for the rest of the week, she was anywhere I was, she was right by my side. So the fact that she remembers, you know, some kid that showed up for a week and hung out with her last year with everything else that's going on in her life tells me that this means that the relationships that we build are meaningful, and it's more than just us going down and building a house, kind of like what Lena said. Whew. Okay. So on top of that, there are a lot more stories that are way more significant than some little girl saying my name. Ask Steve about Denitsa or Nelsie or the countless other people that these guys have encountered over the years because, like I said, way more impactful. Henry, who kind of runs Mercy's base in Honduras, commented several times this year that over the... How long have they been in the invasion? A decade? Or that has just been a drastic change in the people, in the community. And we can't claim it as a victory because there's there is still poverty and there is brokenness, but there's noticeable change. You know, if Henry notices it and he's been there the whole time, that is noticeable change. And the chance that this church has had any hand in that is like sunshine on my heart. Okay, so thank you. To the people who go, and the people who pray, and the people who give, and the people who let us decompress in a pile of tears when we come home. Last thought. If I have to sum up at least this year's trip into one thought, it's this. We talk about being formed in the Imago Dei here. A woman who is way better with words than me wrote this. I'm a child of God, and so is everyone else. We are all on the same side. And so in each new person, I see an invitation to know a new side of God. There are as many sides of him as there are people walking the earth. I think that's why he keeps making people. He's not done telling us about himself yet. So if that's true, the one thing that I can conclude after spending a week with the team and the people in the invasion is what a beautiful God there must be. Thank you.
Corey's going to share just a few thoughts and wrap it up. But that whole idea that I heard, this woman feeling like no one sees me. Boy, as long as there are invisible people, we just got to keep going. We got to keep going to them. Whether it's Haiti, whether it's Honduras, Haiti, it doesn't matter. But we got to make them feel like you're no longer invisible. You not only exist, but you matter.
Thanks. Matthew 9, Jesus went through all the towns and villages, teaching in their synagogues. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. He said to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field." That's probably used in a lot of mission discussion, but I want to go a slightly different direction with it. This team have seen some of the harvest fields, and I can tell you there is fruit ripe on the vine. When we've seen some of it, the children, you know, there's a crop of children. Wow, I'm using this metaphor really terribly. There's a crop of children that are like 16, 17, 18 years old that are in the Hope in a Future program, that are in school, that are ready to graduate. They are going to do amazing things in their community, in their city, in their country. It's a great privilege for us to be a part of that and to see that. And every time that our team interacts with the next crop, the next group of 12-year-olds or 8-year-olds that are growing up in this system that's completely stacked against them, and we get to love on them, we get to remind them that God actually cares about them, we get to help them, you know, we get to be the hands that God uses to provide a house and a concrete floor. It's amazing for us to be a part of that, and it's one more voice that says to them that God is with you, and you can do something with your life. You can be part of the kingdom of God that is growing here. And it's over the years for us to be able to see how God is at work in this community and that people are being lifted up. It's amazing. And it's a world of extremes, though, in any developing nation, because there's people who are, that God is doing something in and it's working and they're growing up, and there's other people that, for whatever reason, are still rotting on the vine waiting for somebody to help them be fruitful. So, like I said, it's a great privilege for us to experience those people, to experience what God is doing, and I thank you guys so much for helping us be a part of this on a continuing basis.
So I love getting the opportunity to hear from such beautiful people, and for so many reasons. One, that it's a chance to for us to celebrate the work that God is doing through them, the work that God is doing in them, as they extend the hands and feet of Jesus. For them to be able to say thank you to all of you who have prayed and given and encouraged them. But also for an invitation. There's in the notes, there's a website or information on each of the three different teams that have shared if you want to follow up and look, you know, find out more of, on how you might be a part of what they're doing next year, or partnering with the Resources Group, or partnering with what Eric's doing with City Life. So there's ways to do that. So the invitation, I think, is specific to these three groups, but I think it's also general. It's the invitation that we heard from the scriptures today to be a neighbor, to have compassion, to extend love and mercy to those that are so deserving of it. So thank you for all the ways that you are already doing that. I just get to highlight a few of the stories that I've heard. So thank you for being such beautiful people. I was sitting there hearing about all the beauty and thinking about some of the terrible things that have also happened this week with the shootings. So it's very much a beauty and ashes theme this week. So I thought it was appropriate for me to close with a prayer from Brian Zond about some of the shootings that happened. So would you stand with me? This will be my benediction. And again, grab the notes. It talks about the pool party that's coming up next week on Sunday. So there's information on that, and then the various websites and information that you can find. Jesus, we sit with you and lament for the land. We lament the long history of injustice that has been upon this land. We weep for the Native Americans who were killed and driven from their land. We weep for the African slaves who were sold and suffered in this land. We weep for the Native Americans who continue to suffer injustice in this land. We weep for African Americans who continue to suffer injustice in this land. We weep for the families of black men who have been unjustly killed. We weep for the families of police officers slain while keeping the peace. We weep for our children growing up in this violent land. But while we weep, lament, and repent, we do not give in to despair. We look to God, for our hope is in God. The psalmist said, "The meek shall inherit the land." Jesus, you said, "The meek shall inherit the earth." Lord, teach us to be meek and trusting, not greedy and clutching. Jesus, you bless those who hunger and thirst for justice. We have a deep ache in the pit of our belly. We have a searing thirst deep in our soul for this wounded land to see justice and to be made whole. But we don't know exactly what to do. So Jesus, we sit with you. We sit with you to see the deep truth that God is love, and that there is no them, there is only us. Amen.